This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they may live. And as I always say, this program is important for all people of the world because the problem of Jewish supremacism is not just a problem for the Arab people or the Muslim people or the Lebanese or the Palestinian people. It's a problem for the American people. It's a problem for Europe. It's a problem for the world. There is a virulent brand of racial supremacism that has incredible power in media and government, and it's affecting policies and programs across the world. If it is legitimate to look at extreme Muslim fundamentalism, if it's legitimate to criticize white supremacy, if it's legitimate to criticize any sort of racism, it must also be legitimate to look at the problem of Jewish supremacy and Jewish supremacism, because this is a problem that is not relegated to a few offshoots of societies. This is a problem that affects governments. It is creating war right now in the Middle East. It's fueling the war on terrorism around the world. It's a legitimate issue that we must discuss. And Jewish supremacism, my book, does precisely that. It exposes this radicalism. I'm often called a white supremacist. I'm not one. I don't even consider myself a, quote, racist, as is defined by the dictionaries. I'm proud of my people, proud of my heritage. And I also believe that Jewish people have every right to preserve their heritage and their genotype. But ladies and gentlemen, we also have a right to live. We have a right to preserve our way of life. And we have a right to our independence. And it's amazing that if you criticize white people who want to preserve their heritage, you're called a really fantastic human rights advocate. But if you criticize Jewish extremism, and Jewish extremism has real power. Well, let me tell you, the people who are resisting the immigration into Europe and America, they have very little power, to tell you the truth. Small political power. But if you criticize Jewish power, which is absolutely immense, the Chabad Lubavitch, a very radical Jewish group, actually has confabs in the White House. This is a group that believes that the entire world and all Gentiles is meant to serve Jews. They literally believe, and you can find it on their website and in their pronouncements, they really believe that they are the, quote, DNA of God. They've had some of their leaders actually say that if a Gentile was passing on the street and a Jew needed a liver, that it is moral and justified for the Jew or the Jewish people to take the liver from the Gentile. Now, this was not some obscure Jewish pronouncement. This was contained by one of the Jewish writers of their law, of their our interpretations of the law called the Halakha, in the largest Jewish newspaper in the United States of America. That was in the Jewish Week. And I can go on and on and on about this subject. I'll give you one more example. I got a letter from a captain in the military, a Marine, and he wrote, and he told me I needed a timeout about the Jewish question because I just had a pathological obsession with it. He was not concerned about it. He told me basically in the letter that because of the high number of Jewish scientists and so forth, that therefore my concerns about Jewish power are irrelevant, are not appropriate. Well, ladies and gentlemen, no one's ever argued that Jewish people, as a generality anyway, are smart people. They are smart. We're not talking about whether people are smart here. And the truth is that if somebody acts criminally or extremely, I'm more concerned and I'm much more worried about someone with a very excellent criminal mind and someone who has a dumb criminal mind. And certainly we have a situation where these people are smart, but and they've been able to manipulate the American people, not simply because they're smart, though, but because they've controlled certain elements of information in the media, and they've dominated certain of our government policies. They've done this not by some vast candlelit conspiracy. They've done it simply by banding together, by working as a group for their own interests. And that's something that I would be criticized for, or you would be criticized for if you did it for your group. But somehow it's okay for them to do this. It's a team strategy. They teach basically that it's great for Jewish people to stand up for their heritage and work for it and advance their particular agenda or their interests, but that it's somehow evil for anyone else to do it. Immoral. You must look at everybody individually, they would tell us in the media. But they themselves, who dominate so much of the media, and they certainly dominate Hollywood enormously, they themselves nakedly and relentlessly pursue their objectives. Now, it must be said, as I talk about this issue, that I'm not talking about all Jews. Certainly, there are many Jews who criticize Israel. My book, Jewish Supremacism, is dedicated to a Jewish person. I don't consider myself anti-Semitic, and that's defined as somebody who simply hates Jews. I certainly, though, am opposed to what I see as elements of Jewish supremacism that dominate a great deal of the Jewish organized community, the major Jewish organizations in the United States of America, for instance, the American Jewish Committee, the American Jewish Congress. We can go on to many other groups. And I'm concerned about this radicalism. I'm concerned about what they're doing in terms of our American foreign policy and what they're doing in terms of media control and media influence to affect our own perceptions of the world and what's going on in the world. Today I'm going to continue on with my chapter on Israeli terrorism. I think it's a very important chapter. It's how Israel itself was founded by terror, that the supremacy that Israel endorses was in fact put into place by terror. Today I'm going to the section called Israeli Weapons of Terror, and this is from Israel 2, Supremacism Through Terror, and this is the section called Israeli Weapons of Terror, and on through this chapter. Here we go. Israeli Weapons of Terror. In the early 1990s, there was a traveling roadshow of U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, Defense Secretary William Cohen, and National Security Chairman Sandy Berger. This trio of Jewish partisans appeared together in speeches and on television programs to promote their renewed bombing of Iraq and their enforced blockading of the country, including food and medicine. The rationale was that Iraq had violated United Nations resolutions because it dared to do research into development of chemical and biological weapons, and that it refused international inspections. Albright, Cohen, and other leading American Zionists effectively bullied the United Nations into supporting these draconian sanctions. Within a few years, the blockade had taken a horrendous toll of life in the desert kingdom that has little production of food and medical products. The same United Nations that had authorized the sanctions estimated that over 1.1 million people, mainly children and the elderly, had perished from the effects of widespread malnutrition, starvation, and lack of medical supplies. In perhaps one of the most callous remarks ever made by a United States government official, Madeleine Albright, in response to a journalist's question, she said, quote, "Such a loss of life was worth it. Some Americans reading my words will refuse to believe it. They'll refuse to believe that America, under our Jewish-influenced leadership, has purposefully caused the deaths of hundreds of thousands of children." But here is the transcript of the interview of America's Jewish Secretary of State with Leslie Stahl of CBS on May 11, 1996. Quote, Leslie Stahl, speaking of U.S. sanctions against Iraq, Quote, we have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it? And Madeleine Albright answers, this is straight from the transcript, I think this is a very hard choice, but the price, we think the price is worth it. The readily acknowledged fact is that Israel has been one of the world's worst offenders in the development of internationally prohibited nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. They have repeatedly violated United Nations international policies, and they've never allowed any sort of international inspection of their facilities, not even from the United States, the nation that has certainly provided most of the military funding that Israel has used for such projects. Does the United States call for the blockade of Israel for such offenses? Does it make billions of dollars of American military aid to Israel contingent on Israeli honoring its commitments not to develop biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons? The former American Secretary of State said that she's willing to cause the death of 500,000 children in order to slow the spread of biological and chemical weapons, but she was just as willing to continue to help finance the development and spread of those kinds of horrendous weapons in Israel. Is it any wonder why such double standards and increasing hatred exist toward the United States of America? And as a side note, Israel itself had violated United Nations resolutions and continues to violate them all the way from the time of 1967 when they invaded the West Bank of Palestine and they proceeded to confiscate and steal the land from the Palestinians who live there. The United Nations resolution demands, which was also, by the way, supported by the United States of America at the time, demands that Israel vacate the land that they occupy on the West Bank. Israel still hasn't. But we have not done any blockade of Israel of food and medicine. We've not caused any Israeli lives. No, on the opposite hand, we've actually given them more weapons, even though they're occupying another people's country and stealing their land and also committing all kinds of horrendous human rights violations, like throwing tens of thousands of people each year in prison and torturing them. The next section is the ultimate supremacist terror weapon. The unholy marriage of Jewish supremacism and terrorism is best symbolized by an entirely new kind of weapon now under development in the supremacist state of Israel. It's an ethnically targeted biological bomb. The Sunday Times in Great Britain revealed that Israel has been developing a terrifying new kind of biological weapon. The story broke at the same time America was getting ready to bomb Saddam Hussein for not allowing weapons inspectors into his country. The headline is Israel Planning Ethnic Bomb as Saddam Caves In by Yuzi Manimi and Mary Colvin. Israel is working on a biological weapon that would harm Arabs but not Jews, according to Israeli military and Western intelligence sources. The weapon, targeting victims of ethnic origin, is seen as Israel's response to Iraq's threat of chemical and biological attacks. Again, of course, chemical and biological attacks. We know now Iraq had no chemical weapons at all. Not only did the inspectors find none, this is a side note, but the United States government spent about $1 billion, believe it or not, that much money to justify the war, I guess, searching for them in Iraq, and they found not a trace. Anyway, I'll go on. Yesterday, Saddam Hussein, the Iraqi leader, backed away from the brink of war and agreed to resume cooperation with the inspection teams seeking his suspected chemical and biological weapons plants. Kofi Annan, the United Nations Secretary General, said he believed Iraq had met UN requirements. As Britain and America stood by to bomb Saddam, however, Tony Blair's office said compliance must be unconditional. The White House, which is threatening Iraq with the biggest onslaught since the Gulf War, said President Bill Clinton's advisors were assessing whether Iraq's offer was adequate. The Pentagon is ready to bomb within days. In developing their ethnobomb, Israeli scientists are trying to exploit medical advances by identifying distinctive genes carried by some Arabs and then created genetically modified bacterium or virus. The intention is to use the ability of viruses and certain bacteria to alter the DNA inside their host's living cells. The scientists are trying to engineer deadly microorganisms that attack only those bearing the distinctive genes. The program is based at the Biological Institute in the Nez Tijona, the main research facility for Israel's clandestine arsenal of chemical and biological weapons. A scientist there said the task was usually complicated because both Arabs and Jews are of Semitic origin, but he added they have, however, succeeded in pinpointing a particular characteristic in the genetic profile of certain Arab communities, particularly the Iraqi people. The disease could be spread by spraying the organisms in the air or putting them in water supplies. Now, the idea of a Jewish state, this is continuing with the quote directly from this major newspaper, in fact, one of the premier newspapers in the world, the Sunday Times of London. The idea of a Jewish state conducting such research has already provoked outrage in some quarters because of parallels with the genetic experiments of Dr. Joseph Mengele, the Nazi scientist at Auschwitz. Didi Zucker, a member of the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, denounced the research yesterday. Morally, based on our history and our tradition and our experience, such a weapon is monstrous and should be denied, he said. William Cohen, the American Defense Secretary, revealed that he had received reports of countries working to create a certain type of pathogens that would be ethnic-specific. A senior Western intelligence source confirmed last week that Israel was one of the countries Cohen had in mind. The ethno-bomb claims to have been given further credence in the Foreign Report, a Jane's publication that closely monitors security and defense matters. It reports unnamed South African sources as saying Israeli scientists have used some of the South African research in trying to develop an ethnic bullet against Arabs. It also says Israelis discovered aspects of the Arab genetic makeup by researching on Jews of Arab origin, especially Iraqis. Additional reporting, Matthew Campbell in Washington, U. McManners. Unquote. Israel, of course, has denied the story that appeared in one of the most respected newspapers of the world, just as it denies every other criticism against them. But tellingly, it also continues to deny any access or inspections of its weapons facilities, including those biological weapons facilities the United States has already identified and has acknowledged in the Israeli state. The fact that Israel would even consider developing such a biological weapon in the light of the endless demonization of the Nazis has monstrous implications. Whether or not the Nazis are truly guilty of all the accusations that Jews have levied against them, the Israel of the 21st century is approaching in reality the extremes of racial supremacism of which the most supremacist Nazi could have only dreamt. In the wake of his attacks on the World Trade Center and of the Pentagon in September of 2001, the United States declared a new war on terrorism. Many millions around the world who know the truth about Israeli terrorism were shocked to see the American President George Bush learning how to fight terrorism from Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. It is certainly true that Sharon should be able to teach Mr. Bush a lot about terrorism, considering that he's the world's leading terrorist. At least Mr. Bush has sought expert advice. While Zionists in Israel were dispossessing the Palestinians, Zionists in America were busy consolidating their power in all the Western nations, also promoting policies that would weaken the identity and the will for self-preservation of the founding Gentile elements of those nations. They'd even set about to make us a minority in our nation, just as they made the Palestinians a minority in Israel. I knew that if the Zionists succeeded in their ultimate objectives, they would destroy our own people's life and liberty, just as they had oppressed millions in the Mideast. The structure and form of modern Israel proves that Jewish supremacism is not an ideology of the past, but an ominous reality of the present, overtly expressed in every sinew of the Israeli state. The fact that the Jewish power structure in America and around the world intensely supports Israel offers convincing evidence that little had changed in the struggle between Jew and Gentile over the last 2,500 years. Moreover, the fact that Jews have been able to get the Western world to support Zionism and all of its bloody hypocrisy is testimony to their power over all forms of media and over our nation's governments. The European and American peoples, the Palestinians, indeed all the peoples of the world cannot survive, nor can they be free, unless that power is broken. Jewish supremacism and Jewish terrorism have, of course, gone hand in hand from the days of the genocide boasted about in the Old Testament, to the brutal murder and suppression of early Christians recorded in the New Testament, to the mass murder and torture of the gulags of the early days of Jewish-led Bolshevism, and of course to the founding and expansion of the Jewish supremacist state of Israel. But up until a summer day in 1967, I never dreamed that my own country could be the recipient of Jewish terrorism. It seemed far away, a faraway phenomenon not really applicable to America. In 1967, Israel launched a deliberate, murderous terror attack against the American Navy ship, the USS Liberty. Learning the sordid details of the attack against my own nation and its subsequent cover-up had a profound effect upon the direction of my life, ultimately even playing an important role in influencing me to continue my research into Jewish supremacism. I was impassioned to expose it, even though I knew that doing so would probably exact a high personal cost. My learning about Israeli terrorism against America was one of the major reasons that you now hold this book in your hands. And now I will turn to the details of this Israeli act of treachery that so appalled me. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of chapter 10. And the next chapter, it's entitled Israel 3, Terrorism and Treachery Against the United States. I look forward to being with you tomorrow to begin this chapter, and I appreciate your support and goodwill. Not only in the United States, but all over the world. I had a few people that were concerned about my safety because I climb a few mountains once in a while in the Alps. And let me tell you, I've been doing this, almost, it seems like, all of my life. In fact, I've been climbing since I was 4. I don't engage in any dangerous activities. I do safe climbing. I'm very careful. And it's just part of my character, so please don't worry about me. I'm not going to be lost to this cause by climbing a mountain. I can assure you that. I stand for people to be careful in all matters and not to be insanely dedicated to their sports or their endeavors that they risk their life. As one mountain climber said very well, who's conquered more of the largest peaks of the world than any other, he said that no mountain is worth your life. But climbing mountains is something that gives me an incredible sense of well-being. It is a way to get away from the horrible day-to-day struggle, sometimes the personal struggle that this cause evokes. And the hardship, and also often the mental hardship involved in standing up for a principle that people sometimes don't understand and sometimes governments try to suppress. I'm going to continue my work, and occasionally I'll be able to climb a mountain, but I hope to be around for many years. I have a lot more danger, I think, from the radical Jewish supremacists and their allies than I do from any mountain. And climbing those mountains occasionally, and again, it's a very tiny portion of my life and an extremely tiny portion of my time, is something that really helps me do what I do and in this cause for our heritage and our freedom. Thanks so much, and I appreciate your support, and your financial support enables me to do this audiobook and enables me to travel the world and to speak and to write and to do the research that I must do, and to help us educate so many more millions about the dangers of Jewish supremacism and about the fact that Europeans and all the people of the world, we must act to defend our heritage, and that European mankind faces a unique threat with our extremely low birth rates, high rates of intermarriage, and absolutely horrendous rates of immigration, a tsunami of immigration into Europe and America. We are losing our very identity, our very culture, our very heritage, and we must act and we must stand up to defend the things that we love. I will continue to do so, and I urge you to join me and to support me in these efforts. We must act now if our people are to survive. Thanks so much. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow for the beginning of Chapter 11, probably the most important chapter for the American people and for many people in the world to understand the nature of Israel. And that is Israel 3, Terrorism and Treachery Against the United States of America. And in this chapter, I will outline and document Israeli acts of terror and treachery against the American people. And the evidence is so strong in this chapter. No reasonable person, I think, after reading this chapter and looking into these issues, can doubt the fact that Israel has committed terrorism against the United States. In fact, the Israeli government has admitted it. Thanks a lot. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukeworldwide.com.